So we're learning to set out a shot. We're in the chapters that speak about emunah. The last thing that we learned together, which was possibly one of the most important pieces we've ever learned, was the perspective of an emunah-oriented Jew. Is that even though he does see the world in a realistic way, and he sees all the events of the world that are taking place, but he's also able to look one step beyond that, one step behind him. And he's able to see that, yes, there are history and there is politics and there is science, there is nature, but all of those elements are being guided by a higher force. So yes, I see here all the puppets moving and all what they're doing, but I recognize there are strings and there's a puppet master and he's engaging the world in that way. And that the famous Ramban, one of the two big famous Rambans, the one in the beginning of Parshas Loshim and the one at the end of Parshas Bo, teaches us that emunah in Hashem is the whole purpose why we're here, and it's the whole principle behind all the mitzvahs. So I'm going to quote that Ramban now. It says the following: therefore, the rabbi said we have to be very careful even about small mitzvahs, light mitzvahs, because all of the mitzvahs are precious, very precious in the eyes of Hashem. Because every moment that a person does a mitzvah, then essentially he's saying, I recognize that Kodesh Baruch Hu, it's all you. So there's no such thing as a big mitzvah or a small mitzvah. Someone says to you, please help out, it's a really big mitzvah. Okay, there are big mitzvahs and small mitzvahs. There's no such thing as a big mitzvah and a small mitzvah. Every mitzvah, no matter how big or small, meaning how much mesirat nefesh you're putting in or not, doesn't make a difference. It's an act of you recognizing that a Kodesh Baruch Hu is behind the wall. You're saying, the only reason I'm doing this is for the sake of Hashem. So really, it doesn't make a difference how impactful the mitzvah is. If you're not looking from the aspect of the this world, you're looking from the impact of the fact that it's emanating from Hashem. And every mitzvah that you do is your declaration that this emanates from Hashem. So whether it is that you're inviting people to your home when it's challenging for you, whether it's that you're doing learning many hours of Torah which could be challenging for you, it doesn't make a difference. All of it is the same. It's all got one root, that it emanates from the will of Hashem. And that's an emunah perspective. And that's the principle and the intention behind all of the mitzvahs. That we recognize that it emanates from Hashem. And He's the one who created us. And in fact, if you take this a step further, the whole reason why we were created, there is no other reason why we were created. And all the upper worlds have a desire in the lower world only for this reason. That we recognize that Kadosh Baruch Hu, that He created us. And that's what the famous vort that Rabbi Rivlin likes to say in the name of Rav Huttner. That in Hebrew, the same word for giving thanks is the same word for admitting. Hoda'ah and vidui are the same root. And why would it be like that? In English it's not like that. If I thank someone, I'm not confessing. My kesha, you know? Thank you. What did you do wrong? Why do we, nothing to do with each other. Thanking and confessing are two totally separate things. But in Yiddishkeit, they're very same essence. Because when you thank someone, you're essentially declaring that I couldn't have done this without you. You did me a tova. I myself am not, but you, with your help, I am. When we exist in the world to be Yehudim, to give thanks, we're essentially declaring that we are not anything without Hashem, that it all emanates from Hashem. So every time we thank Hashem, we're doing vidu, we're confessing that it's not from us. It's all from you, Hashem. We can't go it alone. So it's the same essence, the same root. We are called Yehudim, we could have been called Yisrael. But we're called Yehudim, that's one of the sons of Yaakov, there are other sons of Yaakov. We could have been called the Ephraim, or the Binyaminim. You know, there are lots of names. Why are we called Dakka the Yehudim? So you could say, no, because, you know, the 10 tribes were exiled, and of the two and a half tribes that were left, one of the major ones was Yehuda. Yeah, okay, but why did Hashem arrange Ashkacha to arrange it that would be the major one left over, and that would become our name? Because that's our essence. Our essence is Yehudim, Lehodot, which means to thank Hashem, but it also means to recognize and attribute that it all emanates from Him, it's not from us. And that's the whole reason, according to the Ramban, the entire reason why we are created. Ein lanu tam acher b'yitzira, ve'ein le'elyonim v'tachtonim chayfetz, milvad ze sheyeda ha'adam yodeh l'elokav. We have to first recognize it, and then we have to admit it, that Hashem is the one who created us. And I've often thought this, that if I'm ever involved in a shul, on some shul committee, I would love to have like a nice glass plaque put at the entrance to the shul as you walk in, and it will say on it these words of the Ramban, from the end of Parshas Bo. The Kavanat Romamuta Kol B'Tfilot. And the reason why we daven out loud The kavanat vatekinesiot, and the whole purpose of having shul, the concept of shul, the whole purpose while we have a bet knesset, the zchut harabim, and the merit of the people davening there together, the whole intention is sheyeh lebnei adam makom itkabtzu. No, there'll be one central place that all the people can gather there, for yodu, and they can admit that it comes from Hashem. That's the whole purpose of shul. V'yodu lekel shebaram, and they recognize that Hashem is the one who made us. V'him tziam, and created us. V'yifarsimuze, and they make it public knowledge. That's the Jewish people's mission. That we declare Hashem, we recognize Hashem created us, and we declare it publicly. V'yomru lefanav, and the whole reason why we have shul is for us to come into shul and say to Hashem, b'riotecha anachnu, we were made by you. That's the whole essence. Means there are many different psukim you say, there's many different parts to prayer, but the underlying theme, the message, the goal, what you have to be thinking of is, Hashem, you made us. And we recognize that. And we're giving ourselves over to you. It's like if you go to some boss to ask for a raise, or if you know you go for a particular purpose to someone for a particular agenda. So you might think of the details. Am I going to say this? 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 You have lots of things that you might want to say. But you always have your goal in mind. I'm going to the boss to get a raise. That's why I'm going. That's why I'm going. You have that in mind. So you go to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to daven. And there's Hoda'ah, and there's Shevach, and there's Bakashra. There's lots of things going on. And there's Shachar, there's Milch, Amariv, Musaf. There's lots of things going on. There's Tachanun, and sometimes there's not Tachanun. There's lots of things going on. But what's the underlying theme behind everything? Why? What are we doing? Bichla, like, if you ask, what are you doing? Don't tell me all the different aspects of tefillah and who is it, metukan, kaneged. Just what are you doing? I'm recognizing Hashem created me. That's the whole goal. I'm recognizing I'm from Hashem. He's the one who made me. My strength comes from Him. And not just me, but everyone around me as well. And then we publicize that to the whole world. We'll sing together out loud. And we'll say, you are our Melech Hashem. You are our Creator. We come from you. Everything we ever do in this world emanates from you. And that instills within us an emunah perspective. So as we reiterate again and again, and we acknowledge that everything we do is not us. If we're successful, it's not because of us. And if we fail, then we have to see. If we take responsibility for it, that's fine. But if it's something beyond us, it's beyond us. If we did our best we can do, and then suddenly it didn't work out, it's not because of us either. It's all emanating from our HaKadosh Baruch Hu. The harasha, hakofer bekel. And if there will be a wicked individual who denies Hashem, like those people who say the world is eternal and that it wasn't created by Hashem, they deny Hashem, they say, it's not from him, it's because of me. I'm the one who does everything that goes on in this world. It's not Hashem. Even if they do good deeds, there's no merit to it. And even if they act pleasantly, and they act as a mensch their whole lives. And you see what happens if someone acts as a mensch their whole lives. They don't have a Kadosh Baruch Hu behind them. Nazi Germany comes out of them. Nazi Germany, pre-Nazi Germany, they were the people who were the most educated, the most ethical, the most moral. They were the ones who were teaching what it meant to be a mensch. In fact, the word mensch is German. That's where it comes from. Right? That was where they were such good people, and ethical people, and moral people. And that could be good if you have a Kodesh Baruch Hu behind that, empowering that all the way through. But if you have that without a Kodesh Baruch Hu behind it, then the Ramban calls them a Rosha. And he says that even their good deeds don't have any merit. And what about all those people who are good Jews at heart? You know, those people who are like, they're nice people and they're good people, but they're not, those people aren't kofarim b'Hashem. Maybe they're not committed to doing other aspects of Avodat Hashem. But mostly, if you go to those people and you would ask them, those good-natured, good-willed, honest, straight, good people, they're not the type of people who are denying Hashem, it's not Hashem, it's because of me, the world is eternal, I'm against it. They're not usually. Usually those people are saying like, it's a good thing to do, and I'm glad that our rabbis out there doing it. It's a good thing, let them do it. For me, I'm not cut out for it. They have some excuse. I wasn't brought up though. They have some excuse. But I believe it's important to be a good Jew. I mean, they want to be good Jews. Just they're defining good Jews with parts of it and not the full thing. I'm not saying it's justified in any way. But I don't think the Rambam would call them a kofer by Hashem. They're denying that anything. They might even say, I'm fortunate that God gave me a good nature. They would even attribute that good nature to God. It could be. Those people are good people, and we acknowledge, and they will get rewarded for their deeds. But if it's a person who's denying God, and you say, no, it's all because of me, and look at my morals and my things, which I created independently from myself, then that could lead to terrible things. Zeh pashut v'barur. Mi she'en lo emunah, Haikar chaser b'chayav. Even if externally he's doing all the right actions, he's missing the essence. He's missing the neshama. It's like a marriage where you get married and you agree that you'll take part of the responsibilities and you'll take another part of the responsibilities, and that's it. Finished. Do we have to talk? We don't have to talk. We've agreed. You're going to do those things, I'll do those things. We don't have to talk. We worked it all out. We're business partners, we've worked out what part you're in charge of. You know, like Rothschild. You know, some of them went to Europe, and some of them went to America, and some of them went to France. Okay, fine. I was going to say England, I wasn't sure it was part of Europe. So they all went to different places. And now, it's true that they're all part of a bank called Rothschild, but each one's a world in and of themselves. He's an idiot. They're each in their own area. So you could have a marriage like that. You could have a couple that get together, and they agree upon who's going to do what in the marriage, and then that's it. They don't need to talk anymore. And you could have a relationship with Hashem like that. God told me to do mitzvahs. Okay, what are the mitzvahs? This and this and this. Okay, I'll do it. God, done. Yeah. If God... have you davened? Okay, I'll daven. What are you doing davening? God said to me to read these psukim. I read the psukim. What's God got to do with that? You know, I'm talking to him. I'm not talking to him. I'm doing what he told me to do. This is part of the contract that we have. He's going to give me health and life and children and everything. And I will do all these deeds that he needs me to do. And so we don't have to have a relationship from now on. Anyone who doesn't have a munah, doesn't have an ongoing relationship with Hashem, Haikar chaser b'chayav, he's missing the essence. Umayo ilu lo kol masim atovim, and even if he's doing good deeds, it's not building the relationship. It's not forming the bond. Like in that marriage, if I do my part of the deal in the marriage, but we're not connecting, then it's not going to strengthen our bond. You might say, our partnership is a strong partnership. Because each one knows his roles, and no one's stepping into anyone else's shoes. So it's a good partnership, but it's not a bond. It's not a bond. There's no relationship. It's basically a divide. It's people who have inherited, and they each took their separate parts, and they divided. They're not connected anymore now. They're not part of one unit. So with a Kadosh Baruch Hu, that's without a relationship without a Kadosh Baruch Hu, it's lacking the essence. And when we speak about Emunah, there are four different aspects that we're going to start, at least the first of, maybe the second of today, to understand what's incorporated within Emunah. Four different aspects of Emunah. So part number one. Emunah is a koach, mikochot ha-nefesh, she'i efshar lichyot biladehem. So part number one of Emunah is its inbuilt strength in our soul that Hashem gave us, which is true whether you believe in Hashem or you believe in something else. But the principle of faith that we have within us, of trust that we have within us, is an inbuilt characteristic. No, that's not the right word. An inbuilt force which Hashem gave us, which we lead our lives by, and without that we can't lead our lives by at all. We rely on people throughout our lives. If someone proves themselves to be a liar, we'll stop believing in them. Now we could lose trust in someone, but the default is that we'll trust. If you go ever to a store and someone tells you about a product, you trust them. You don't automatically say, oh, maybe he's faking me, there's nothing in the box. Let me just open the box. Oh, you see, it's not. You don't do that. Like, you presume there's a basic level of trust. If a doctor gives you a tablet, you don't say, wait, I'm going to take it home to my own personal laboratory, I'm going to cut a piece off and test it. No, if a doctor said to you, this is the medicine you should take, you trust him. Maybe someone will look it up on Google for extra measure, but overall, you trust him. And in fact, you put your life on your line daily by doing this. Because when you drive, you trust that that person on the other side is going to stop at red. He may not, and that will be the end of one's life, Chas V'Shalom. But you trust him, and you live your life in a trust system. There are places which you don't. I remember when we went to Hebron for Shabbos. We were walking down Shabbos, we went near the Arab part. We could hear hooting, hooting, honking, honking. We said, what's all the noise? He said, they don't have traffic lights. When they get to a junction, they keep going, and whoever started honking first, like, he prays that he's going to get through. And hopefully the other person will hear he was honking first and he won't go through. But the loudest honker wins. Good luck to them all. You know? But we live in a trust system our whole life. Nothing to do with religion here. Nothing to do with religion. We live in a basic sense of trust. How do any of you know that you weren't adopted? Have you checked the files? Have you done blood tests? How do you know? Maybe you're all adopted and your parents are your parents. But you live with a basic sense of trust. How do you know it's your name? Did you check your birth certificate to check it? So the funniest story. There was a guy who came out of an asylum. And he was let out because he was healthy. You know, relatively. And he went on the bus. And as he gets on the bus, and the person told me the story was overseeing him. And he wanted to see how he would act. It was the first time they were letting him out. So he sat at the back of the bus one stop before to like be inconspicuous and to see what would happen when he gets on the bus. So the guy gets on the bus and he goes to the driver, are you sane? So he says, yes. And he says, how do you know? No. And then the woman sitting there, are you saying? So she says, yes. How do you know? She says, I just know. None of you know. I have a certificate that proves that I'm saying, you see? I'm saying, can you prove it? You can't prove it. Because he was given a certificate that he could prove that. How do you know anything? We live in a trust system, right? And you don't need a certificate to prove that you're saying. We trust. This person's probably normal. I can live my life based on the fact that they're probably normal. We live, that person didn't have trust, right? So that's an example of someone who didn't have basic emunah. He needed a certificate to tell him that he's normal. And without a certificate, he wouldn't know that he's normal, because he doesn't have the basic emunah in himself. He doesn't know that. We trust people, unless we find out that they're false. All our relationships with people in friends and in countries are based on a mutual trust. And without that, we can't live our lives. You go into a store, you trust the shopkeeper, the way he's selling you is a good product. It might not be. It might not be. And then you won't buy there again. But the default is that you trust him. And a Talmud trusts his Rebbe. For once, in that next classroom over there, and my Rebbe was, I learned by Rebbe Buchros. He was a Rebbe here I learned by him for 3 years. So once there was a boy who was a Tam Chacham Atzum, Gaon, actually Mamash Gaon. He was in a kollel, he learned by honest, this other person. And once I wanted to show my son what it means to be Tam Chacham. So I said, just for fun, I said to my son, what are you learning? My son just started learning Gemara. And some concept came up, and I said, go and ask him where that appears in the Gemara. So my son went up to him and said to him, where does it say in the Gemara some phrase? So he said, in 3 places. In Brochas, in Adon, in Kedush, I said, wow, he really knows. So this kid was very, he's now a rabbi in a yeshiva high school, way overqualified to be a rabbi in a yeshiva high school. But he was very tokpanik, like he would ask questions to the rav, and like, where do you know that from, where is that from, where is that from? So the rav once said to him, wait, let me ask you a question. When he was in the middle of, like, the Rav was in the middle of saying a flow. And you know how annoying it is when the Rav is saying a flow and someone asks a question that the Rav has to answer now, but, like, let him finish. He's already going to finish. So Rav Buchros, he was very sharp. And so he said, no, that doesn't make sense because this and this. And he said, oh, yeah, right. So then he's quiet. And then Rav Buchros burst out laughing. And he said, well, what's funny? He said, I just gave you a terrible answer. The answer I said doesn't make any sense. But as long as you didn't understand, and you think it's okay, and I can carry on with my share, that's fine. And he carried on giving share. And this kid was like, what is that? Why not? Why doesn't it make sense? And he was like, oh, like, within himself, in turmoil within himself. But usually you trust the Rebbe. That when he says to you, this is an answer, then it's a good answer. In this case, Rav Buchros just wanted to carry on his share, so he gave an answer which would satisfy him, kind of. And Rav also did that with us sometime in the intro. But usually you don't do that. Usually, if a Rebbe has something, you trust him, and that's what keeps going. Hashofet ein yochol lismoch al hagdarat ha-nesham. If you have a judge, then by definition, because of his role, he doesn't trust the person. Because the person's been accused. So there you have to clarify all the evidence. Do you have a certificate saying that you're honest, or you're true, or you're saying? I don't have to see it. A judge needs to, because that's a place where it's built in that there is no trust. Aval ma'amin hu le'edim, but even he trusts the witnesses. Right? So even there, where a system where we're not trusting, there is built-in trust even into that system. וכמה חזק האימון שהילד רוכש להוריו. And how strong is the trust that a child has in his parents. Most children think that their parents are superheroes. Until they discover they're not, and it's really disappointing. But they think they're invincible, and they can do anything, and whatever they say is amazing and impressive. And then they see that not everyone thinks the same way as their parents, and they think of clever things that their parents didn't know, and it's really disappointing at some point. But initially, if the parents don't ruin it, if the parents are honest, they say they don't know when they don't know, but they give credible answers and explanations when they do know, then the trust that a child has for his parents is infathomable. It's unbelievable. In between countries, the default is that things work out, unless one of them betrays the other one. And that's the default. Once there's no trust between two countries, there could be a war. Everything could fall apart. But what his principle is here is that emunah, before you even bring God into the picture, emunah is a basic force in man which we lead our lives by on every level. Children, parents, friends, storekeepers, doctors, countries, on every level. We have a basic sense of trust that we trust in everyone else and we relate to everyone else with a sense of trust. Koach norahu emunah. It's an unbelievable force, emunah. Lu hayita nirkevet b'leiv ha'adam. אחד של כל האמונה לא יישאר מאומה בעולם שיאמין בו אין קיום לאדם הזה. If there would be a person in this world who wouldn't have anything to trust in, he would rot away and cease to exist. A person can only live in a world because he trusts in something. He has some basic sense of trust. And because of that, that gives him stability. And it gives him a sense of place. I've probably told this story before, but it's just amusing, so I want to share it again. When there were rockets, did I tell the story about the Tehillim? When there were rockets from the south, 3-4 years ago, so the government wanted to help the emotional stability of our children. So they sent, I told the story, was it last year or this thing? And they, I'll tell it again, suppose it. So they sent a chayelet, a woman soldier, to come, who's like a social worker, to come and give strength to our children here in Keren Biavne. So they gathered them all together, and she said, what do you do? What do you do when the siren goes? So the children said, we go to the shelter. And she said, and how do you feel in the shelter? Do you feel scared and nervous? The children said, sometimes a little bit. She said, you don't have to be, because who can you trust in? And they said, Hashem. She said, oh yeah, you could that also, but no, we have an army, and the army has built this amazing system which can knock out the missiles from the sky. So you don't have to be scared, children. You can rely on the missiles that we're shooting, which are going to protect you. And the children said, but who made those missiles? She said, the army. Yeah, but who made the army? Hashem. It's like, okay, fine, but okay, say you believe in God, but really, it's okay, because we have anti-missile weaponry that's working out here. And the kids were just laughing. They were just laughing. It's like, we think our reason is much more grounded than yours. We think we were much better off until you came, and now you've confused us a little bit, but we're much more stable than you were. Everyone has trust. You could place that trust in Hashem, and then you're a much stronger grounding. Or you could trace that trust in... Now, what happens if you place trust in something like that, and then it fails you? Well, then what are you going to do now? And people have nervous breakdowns. People are so scared, because now what? My whole trust was in my pension fund. My whole trust was in the trust that I had in this particular person who's going to help me and protect me. My whole trust was in the army. Now they've turned their backs on me. Now what? My whole life has fallen away. It's tremendous strength. The strength of Emun. Without it, we fall apart. So as well as this basic fact that we trust each other and all of our lives are based on this trust, there's also an innate need that man feels, unless he pushes it away, but man feels that he has to figure out what's life about? What's the meaning of life? What's the purpose? Who can I really trust in? Like, what's the purpose behind it all? Where does it all emanate from? Chidat ha-chaim. And people look for a munna for that. They look for, like, what can I trust in? What can I place my trust in? Something higher. People are always looking for some higher force to place their trust in. Some people will channel that towards politics, and they'll put all their faith and trust in some political party. Some people will go to a cult, or to some other religion, because I have to place my trust in something higher, some force, some being. Some people will have some communal organization that they trust in, and they place all their faith in, and that's what they'll, like, place their faith in. Everyone has faith in something. Even someone who denies Hashem has some philosophy, has some idea, has some hero, and that thing that he trusts in and believes in, and that's what keeps him going, some higher force that attaches himself to, that's what gives him his sense of, wow, I could be in this world, because that thing is perfect. Sometimes it's Stalin, sometimes it's Hitler, sometimes it's some American figure, sometimes it's a musician. Whatever it is, or sometimes it's a philosophy, I believe in democracy, I believe whatever it is that you believe in, but there's some ideal that everyone will hold up as insurmountable, infathomable, amazing, above me. And they continue to believe in that false thing, even when that thing is broken apart and smashed to pieces, but they say, no, I have faith. And that's blind faith. That's an unhealthy blind faith. It's a blind faith which you see in front of your eyes that it's no longer true. And they continue to say, no, I'll make up a new philosophy about how it's true. And there's so many stories in different religions that their religion was going this way, and then something happened and it didn't make sense anymore. And they just, like, redoctored it and rechanged it, and the new constitution came in, and, like, everything. Okay, now it's okay. And we're continuing with this new aspect of our belief. When the state of Israel was founded, then Catholic Christianity were on their knees What does this mean? This is against everything we believe in. Our whole religion is based on the fact that Jews were rejected. And now the Jews have been chosen. Our whole belief system is that they're downtrodden and down and out, and we are the chosen ones. How are they getting a land again now? And they refused to enter Israel through the main entrances of Israel, because they couldn't accept it as a faith, because it went against their faith. Then, that was the first pope and a half. And then, after that, they just redoctored it all. They go, okay, not a problem. The eventual second coming of their Messiah will be through the Jews coming first, then the Jews strengthen their land, and then that will be the step to... Okay, you can just pick up different core tenets of your faith if it doesn't work out with the going in reality. So everyone has to have a higher form of faith. You have to have it. It's an inbuilt system that HaKadosh Baruch Hu made you with. As we're going to see as we go on, that Hashem designed that for us, obviously, to connect to Him. You can't get rid of that force. That's Hashem's built-in system that we connect to Him through. You can rechannel it in an unhealthy way and attribute something else as great and as your God, if you wish to. But the purpose of why it was created was to use that emunah in Hashem.